It's time to get on the ice. Music City Gold is on the air with Kyle Hancock, Daniel Mangrum, and Matt Bain. We are Smashville's best fan-driven podcast, featuring news around the league, the Predators, and the occasional hot take or two. Powered by the Ingram Agency, you're listening to Music City Gold on Penalty Box Radio.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Music City Gold. We're glad you're here. We got a great show for you today. We'll be talking some things around the league, Pecorino's contract extension, and Preds in-game arena host Deanna Kay will be joining us. But first things first, let's get the introductions out of the way. I'm Kyle. With me, as always, are Daniel and Matt.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
So how you guys been the last 2 weeks since we recorded?
You know, I'm smiling ear to ear right now because I just got to hear our new intro, and it sounds awesome.
That's right.
I mean, how professional is that?
Sounds legit.
We sounded like a real radio station right there, Kyle.
It did. It was really good, and hope you guys like it. Matt, you've got nothing exciting that's happened to you in the last 2 weeks. Nothing at all.
Actually, we got together and did some pumpkin carving the other day at Daniel's house, so that was pretty exciting.
Sure did. What did you carve, Matt?
Well, some of you guys know me. I'm a gun guy, so I went for a Sig Sauer logo, one of my favorite gun brands. So that's what I carved. A little bit easier. I came in a little bit late, so I kind of had to scramble up for some time. And
But block letters on a round object. I'm just saying, a little trickier.
It was a little trickier, but that new logo that says Just Sig, it's a circle logo. It fit very well on a pumpkin, so that's what I did.
Yeah, it was a fun event. I actually got all these pumpkins for a pretty cheap price. I actually did the Star Wars Mandalorian symbol. For all you nerds out there. So maybe Justin's listening to this and actually appreciating it. But I got to spray paint it the other day, so it looks awesome. You got to see it, Kyle, now. Flat black Mandalorian Star Wars pumpkin.
Really? Kind of reminds me of my wallet, which has the Mandalorian symbol on it.
Yes. So but, Matt's shaking his head right now because he has no idea what we're talking about.
I know what you're talking about, but I'm not as deep into nerddom as you guys are.
You're into your own nerddom, which is board games.
Yeah, that's true. Different sect there.
You know, if I was to ask you, how many board games do you own?
Maybe 200 and something.
How much money have you spent on these?
That's a great question.
that's a great question.
Maybe we should ask your wife. She's around.
Let's go ahead and go to the next topic.
He's been wheeling and dealing, though. So it's like when he gets rid of one, another takes its place. So technically, he's probably had like 500 board games.
Yeah. Rather than just keep buying, you know, you just accumulate a bunch of junk. So when you get done with something, you just let it go and trade it for something else. So that way you have less stuff. Bit of a minimalist. Not really, but it's better than just continually buying stuff. So,
you know, I love all the games you bring over, but one of my favorite has to be Las Vegas, the gambling game.
That is a great game.
And do you know what the league did this week, Kyle?
You know, I believe I read something where Gary Bettman and NHL decided they want to do their own betting in Las Vegas, specifically with MGM Resorts.
You know, it's very interesting that we thought a couple years back that they were kind of on the fence about actually initiating this. And then I know, I think it was last year, the NBA kind of took a stance towards, you know, kind of mainstreaming all of the betting and, of course, the rise of, like, sites like FanDuel. And I know Matt's actually participated in these, so I can't even really speak for it myself. But it is very interesting that they finally came to an agreement, and, boy, the money is there. That I think, has to be a big part of it, especially for the Players Association.
You got to think about also what MGM's going to get. So TSN's Frank Saravelli said the NHL announced a multi-year partnership with MGM Resorts, like we said earlier, but MGM is going to get access to the league's intellectual property and advanced game data stats.
Yeah, that's incredible for a betting organization. So now they're able to get the actual insider stats and be able to accurately predict, you know, the lines better. They're going to be able to probably make more money in the long run because of this deal. So it's interesting to see the league take this stance, but I think it was all in the name of the player safety agreement too as well. So it'll pad the pockets, but I'm surprised they actually went ahead and went through with it.
Well, Bettman said he cited the Supreme Court's landmark ruling in May, which struck down a 1992 federal law banning commercial sports betting in most states, as the reason for the NHL's abrupt about-face to do this. He says, quote, "The world changed and we're adapting to it," end quote. And he also goes on to say, Frank Saravelli says in another tweet, he says, quote, Bettman says, "I've never worried about it and don't worry about the integrity of our game. It has been strong even when the majority of gambling was not through legal sports books. Bettman says the NHL will monitor all games for gambling issues, such as line shift, through third-party resources. And as an IT person by trade, I'm a little concerned of how that third-party resource monitoring is going to go, because if the NHL doesn't have direct access to that, then that is kind of open for exploitation.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I was looking at some of the fine print, but it's only a four-year agreement, apparently. Is it only 4 years?
I think it's what it is.
And it is with FanDuel as well. So it is definitely going into the fantasy range area, to where they're going to definitely be pushing that on people more to be more interactive and play more of these games or the fantasy leagues.
Well, they say that the NHLPA is also going to get a share of this. They're going to get 50% of revenue generated from the partnership. Industry experts have reported that the legalization of gambling in the U.S. could be worth as $216 million per year to NHL.
Yeah, that's quite a lot. And I'm interested to see how they're going to allocate that inside of the Players Association. So I hope they're a little bit more forthcoming with what the plans are for the future and kind of how the allocation is going to be split up. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
So with the gambling, would you guys be up for doing it? Would you have a particular player or team you would put money on?
Well, for me personally, I have never actually done a FanDuel, you know, kind of fantasy one-night league thing. Matt, you've actually played, so how does it kind of work?
Yeah, so you basically create a fantasy roster for one night out of the teams available, and you have a certain amount of allocation of money, and each player costs a certain amount, so you select players based on how much money you have available to your roster, and you make different picks, and you can join different leagues with a different value set, how much you want to play. You want to play a dollar league, or they even have like a quarter league, or $10, whatever you want to play. And depending on how much money you put in, it generates a higher chance for more money, winnings, and prizes. So it's really fun. Actually, you learn a lot from playing these about which players are hot lately in the points and what actually factors in, just besides assist and goals, like maybe defensemen. What are some of those factors that gain you points on this app and what they do? And so there's some more things that you learn to watch out for. So that's very interesting. I enjoy it. It does help me have a deeper look and a better understanding at some of the depth and complexity in the game and what each player does.
That's kind of an interesting take on it, because I know there are going to be people out there who abuse it, you know, and obviously get sucked into it and get addicted to it. But I think for the casual user, I don't see anything wrong with it. I think I would actually kind of be like apt to putting in a dollar every now and then, and then all three of us staking claim on one night and just to get bragging rights, you know. I mean, just, yeah. I might win $5, but I beat you.
Yeah, one of the first nights I played it, actually, I actually won $200, maybe the first night I played it. And I said, well, you know, that's what people do in Vegas. They say, well, let's take more. Let's keep going. Well, what I did, I'm not crazy. So I took $180 and cashed it, basically, got out, and left me $20 in. So that lets me have some money left in the account to, you know, play around with, like, quarter slot leagues and stuff, some cheap stuff. So I'm not really losing money, but I still get to be involved. And it is fun. It's exciting. It's something else for the hockey fan to do besides just watch a game. And it's pretty exciting.
You mean you don't just go all in? You say, hit me and go?
No, I'm not one of those crazy Vegas people.
He doesn't play for Vegas.
What I'm waiting for is him to be like, you know what, guys? I lost my house betting on hockey teams.
No way.
No, Matt's far too conservative for that.
That's right.
Sometimes almost conservative to a fault, don't you say, Matt?
Some say, maybe.
Well, you know, Kyle, there's a couple teams that aren't conservative anymore.
Yeah, I think we decided to call this things that don't suck anymore.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This year has been absolutely crazy. And we have, you know, some stuff pulled up on the screen right here. And what is kind of mind-boggling is if you looked at the Pacific, there are certain teams that there is no way I thought would be at the bottom and no way I thought would be at the top. And first of all, it's the Canadian invasion here. Calgary, Vancouver, and Edmonton are at the top of the Pacific. And you know who are at the bottom? Vegas and the Los Angeles Kings. I never would have predicted that going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, you got the Canucks are ranked second in the Pacific. They're fourth in the West and sixth in the league. And it leads to the question of how bad Vancouver did last year. Is the Pacific really this bad, or are the Canucks really that good?
The answer is the Canucks are that good right now.
They are right now.
That is the answer.
But can they stay that hot the entire season?
No, that's not. Yeah.
Let me go look at it. You got Elias Pettersson. He's got 9 goals, 6 assists for 15 points. He's ranked 12th as of this recording in goals scored, and he's 35 points. Then you got Bo Horvat and Brock Besser with 11 points, respectively. And what's funny is Bo's got 7 goals and 4 assists, and then Brock's got 4 goals and 7 assists. And that's also helping the team offensively, but do you think these three can continue it?
I don't see it trending this way for the entirety of the season. I do like the Oilers to kind of keep it up a little bit, though it is the McDavid show. You know, I mean, it's the McOilers right now, essentially. I am really high on the Calgary Flames. After seeing them play multiple times, Johnny Hockey looks incredible.
Yeah, he does.
He has been playing out of his mind. Their power play is pretty hot right now, no pun intended. I'm thinking actually Calgary makes the playoffs, but some of these teams that are towards the bottom are even more shocks to me. Like, San Jose is in the middle of the mix where, you know, they sign Carlson and everyone's thinking, oh my, this is it. Roll the parade out right in the streets of San Jose. Well, they're not clicking as well as everyone thought they are, but I give that some time. You know, just give it another 20, 30 games. I have a feeling they're going to hit their stride. They're going to come up. Anaheim, they're so plagued with injuries right now that they came out hot for some reason and then they have tailed off hard. And I don't see them sustaining it. Arizona will be kind of middle to the bottom of the pack.
Bro, Arizona is surprisingly good in a couple of categories.
Yeah, surprisingly good because it's crazy. Their PK is the best in the league right now.
Oh, yeah, actually with Arizona now has 5 wins in a row, and that's the first time they've done that since 2013.
Yeah.
It's
been a while.
You mentioned their power play. They actually have 7 goals shorthanded through 12 games. That's the second most shorthanded goals through that amount of games in history. 7 shorthanded goals through 12 games. They actually have a higher scoring percentage on their penalty kill than on their power play. They have an 18% goal scoring rate on their penalty kill and only 14 on the power play.
That's hilarious.
And only one team in history has ever been +4 while shorthanded at any point in history, at any point in during their season. So whatever they're doing right now, they're doing fantastic.
So basically you're saying the Coyotes are taking penalties to score goals?
Yes.
I mean, it's almost counterintuitive.
It is, but I don't know. That unit, their penalty kill unit is just on it right now.
Yeah, they have definitely been quite the shock this year. But as we get to the bottom of this list, I think these are the two most shocking things in the Pacific right now, and that is the Golden Knights.
Yeah, well,
being
we kind of
seventh.
Yeah, we saw
dream
that
wore
coming.
Off that entire Cinderella story. It's gone.
Well, you know, I was sitting there thinking the other day, how hard is it to motivate them now that the new is worn off? Last year, they had that chip on their shoulder because, you know, they had the whole misfit, band of misfit toys kind of mentality where they don't belong here, and they use that, and that's what fueled them for a while, and now they don't have any of that. It's kind of like, well, we made it to the finals, but we didn't win, and now we're not new, and everyone knows it. So it's kind of like, I don't know, their offense has dried up. I mean, they're scoring like less than 2 goals. It's like right under 2 goals a game. It's insanely low.
Well, I think every team had the entire gear to get that whole Vegas, quote, flu under their belt, and now they know what they're coming into when they go to Vegas.
And they also just signed, they just extended Nate Schmidt a 6-year deal at $6 million per.
Pretty pricey.
And that is a hefty price to pay for a guy that really had a great season last year, but everybody knows it's going to tail off. So you can't pay a guy for $6 million in the future for one season of performance. You can't pay him for past performances. And it's just, that's too much money for that. You know, it's not the right time. Like I said, give me the show me deal or something, but that's too much money on the books for them right now. They're good on the books, but you keep making deals like that with guys who may or may not keep producing in the future, and you're going to find yourself in a little bit of trouble in the future.
Yeah, the house will not always win in that situation.
Well, you know, you're talking about players having contracts for past performances. Let's look at Anze Kopitar. Guy's making $10 million for at least the next 5 years. We just said earlier the Kings are at the bottom of the Pacific. They are last in the league at 31st. If I were to ask you guys, how many goals does Anze Kopitar have right now for the year?
I said 6.
I'm going to say 5. It's depressing.
He's got 4.
Wow.
4 goals, 2 points for 6 assists for the year. And he's making $10 million. You got Jeff Carter, got $5.2 million, 4 goals. Ilya Kovalchuk, 4 goals. He's making $6.2 million. And it's so bad that if you guys didn't see the news on Twitter, the Kings have fallen so bad, you can almost say they've been casting their crowns.
No. No, Kyle.
Hey, it was a good joke. But they replaced their coach. Helen Elliott on Twitter reported on November 4th that the Kings had replaced Stevens with Willie Desjardins as a new interim coach. And what's curious is that he was fired by the Canucks.
Shocker. Yeah, a couple years back.
I mean, but can you blame him for all of their woes right now? Because
no, you can't. That core is aging.
Yeah, and on top of it, they come out of the gate and Quick gets injured. Mm-hmm. He's sidelined for a bit, and you know he's definitely carrying that team. He's an excellent top-tier goaltender. But then they get the devastating news that Quick is going to be out the entire season. I mean, I kind of get it because, I mean, they are literally at the bottom in almost every stat. But at the same time, you cannot hang it all on the coach. So that's just my sidebar for him. But maybe the change was needed just to freshen him up, maybe get the boys going again, try to rally the troops. But I just don't see him clawing out of the basement right now.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes in the future. Hopefully better, because currently, if you look at their roster and compare that to Colorado, another team that does not suck currently, Colorado's top line of Nate McKinnon, Rantanen, and Lagnaskog, they have 63 points together, and that is the same amount as the Kings' entire roster.
Yeah,
that's just one line
from
Colorado.
That's the top line.
And it should be noted that the Avalanche also lead the Central with 52 goals. That's second for the entire league.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Actually, Varlamov is fifth in goals against actual versus expected. He was first in this category. He's tailed off a couple since maybe the last week or so once I got that data from. That data was from The Point. And they actually have multiple players with 20 points now, Colorado has, through 14 games. And that is the first time since the glory days of Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg in 96. And last on the docket of things that don't suck, I'm going to throw this in real quick, is that the New York Islanders are on a 5-game win streak, and they lead the Metro Division.
They beat the Penguins back-to-back games, by the way.
Impressive.
Very impressive. And also, I'd like to point out, too, the only downside, I think, to Colorado right now is their defense, because they actually lost a game to the Canucks the other night, 7-6.
Mm-hmm.
So their games are wide open. So they're scoring a lot of goals, but they're also letting a lot in, too, and on certain nights. So that's going to be something to kind of watch going forward with Colorado, is what happens when that top line actually goes through a spell where they're not clicking or they kind of cool off a bit. It could come back down to earth.
Yeah, they're going to come back down
quick.
To earth.
So I think they're still going to make the playoffs, and they're still going to be a very competitive team, but it's really going to be dependent on that top line because the depth still isn't there.
Well, guys, I think we're going to wrap up league news and get to our guests. We have a very special guest on the show today. Joining us by phone is Deanna Kay. She is the Preds in-game host. Deanna, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you here. So you're fairly new to the job. You're taking over from Maverick, correct?
I am the new in-arena host, correct.
So the first thing I'm going to ask you, because, you know, it's obviously a hockey fan base. How long have you been a fan of hockey?
I have been a fan of hockey my whole entire life. I grew up in Minnesota, so as you know, they call it the state of hockey. But yeah, my whole life. I mean, when I was a kid, I'd come home from school, and in the winters, we'd get to go down the street and skate on the ponds, the frozen ponds. And when we were lucky and it was a good winter, Dad would make a sheet of ice in the backyard. So my whole life.
So now you said you're from Minnesota. Were you a fan yeah. of the Minnesota Wild or the Minnesota North Stars?
Now you're trying to age me. So,
that's
North
a leading
Stars.
Question. Easy, Kyle.
You know, I grew up loving Dino Cicerelli and, you know, Neil Broughton and all those names. Nice. So great memories made then. And the Wild, of course, too.
So before...
Not so much anymore, right? All friends.
Well, that actually leads into the second part of my question is that, you know, before becoming the in-game arena host, had you been to a Preds game before?
Oh, yeah, I've been to several Preds games. I moved to Nashville. I've been here for at least 10 years, and music brought me here, and I was so happy there was a hockey team because, obviously, I love hockey and I'm passionate about it. So definitely at least 10-plus years, I've loved the Predators.
Did you have some mixed emotions there with the Predators facing the Wild the other night?
No, no, I even have a, you know, friend that plays for the Wild, but, you know, my loyalty is definitely to the Predators. I mean, I'll cheer on the Wild if I'm home and enjoying a game, but no, no mixed emotions. I'm all, you know, gold for sure.
Well, you said that music is what brought you to Nashville initially. So what was it that led to you becoming the in-game arena host for the Preds? And what is that, like, a normal day entail for you on game days doing that?
Well, as far as the actual process or hiring of the in-arena host for the Preds, I'm a host and producer, so I work in music and sports, and I do stuff for, like, Kenny Chesney for No Shoes Radio and his stadium tours. So the process was just a few interviews and then submissions of my previous work. So, you know, I sent in, like, my VH1 red carpets, and I worked on The Voice for NBC. So I had a lot of network experience. And like I said, I do stadiums for Kenny. So that was fun, and they liked my work. And then I went in for the interviews. And I think, like any great working environment, your coworkers become family right away. And that definitely happened with the Preds organization. So as far as the hiring, that process, but game day, that's a whole nother thing. My day will start off, I'll be producing or working, you know, my other job. And right now I do a live show for CMT. So I'll have conference calls and doing set lists and music to get ready for our Friday night show. And then I, like many hockey people, am very superstitious. So I have to do, like, my game day rituals. I mean, I have, like, tacos and go to Chipotle and I go to Target and get new socks and listen to Caleb and all these things. And then I get ready and I head to the arena. I get there usually about 3:30. Right away, I do a video that I just say, hey, you know, I'm Deanna, and let me know where you're sitting, and I want to come say hi and maybe bring you some stuff. Because that was really important to me, to get to meet people and know people face-to-face and personally. I try to do that right away. And then after that, we have a production meeting, and we go over everything from what's going to be on the screen to the games we're playing to intermission. And then I go out and I look for the people who are going to play the games. And then, you know, we get started.
So you're saying you're not superstitious, you're just a little stitious?
just a little. The socks, and if we win, I keep them. If not, you know, I donate them.
Can you share with us any of the behind-the-scenes moments that, you know, people normally don't see in the arena?
Oh, man. Oh, no, there's so many. I think we'll have to do this again so I can come up with something better. But honestly, I really think just everybody, like, behind the scenes, once you get down to the level in the locker room area, just seeing the whole crew, from the ice crew to people who work with the Preds Foundation to the players, everyone is so passionate and about their job and wants to put on the best game or the best show that they can. And, I mean, I really love that. Behind the scenes, oh, the opposing team, you know, in the area that I'm in, they always kind of get ready and, you know, do the soccer game and get loosened up. And I definitely try to stay away from that area because I almost lost my head the other night. So I stay away from that in certain parts.
You know, I've heard that a lot, actually, like all the reporters and people that come down there, like, have to stay away because they will get hit by a ball.
Yeah, it was a close call. So I'm like, I'm going to stay out of this area for a minute.
But I do want to circle back real quick and on your superstitions. I just have to ask, Chipotle?
Yeah, Chipotle. I don't know why. I think it's just like the game we won, I did that, and then I did it again, and I was like, okay. And so Chipotle. I'm a Chipotle girl. Three tacos, lettuce, chicken tacos, lettuce, cheese, that's it.
That is very specific.
I mean, Daniel and I, we go to a lot of the games more than Matt can, and we have a couple of game day traditions too. I know, like, my second favorite team is the Washington Capitals, and I can't believe I'm going to admit this on the air.
Wow.
But most Preds games that we win, I'm normally wearing a Washington Capitals hoodie underneath my Preds jersey.
He's channeling Ovechkin spirit.
I was going to say, my friend John Anthony, who I work with in Kenny's World, he does Caps Radio 24/7, and he's the same way. He has Caps stuff under his Preds gear, and I call him on it all the time.
So Kyle and I also, this is a couple years back now, actually before you got here, in the Family Fun Zone, they used to give out wristbands for all-you-can-eat food, and that's where Kyle and I used to sit. But we kept our wristbands on the entire playoff. So what happened that one year is we made it all the way to the finals, but we had every single wristband. It showered with us. I mean, it was there. I went for a job interview, and I had to roll them up inside of my dress shirt because I still had, like, you know, 10 to 12 family fun zone, all-you-can-eat inclusive bands on my wrist there. But, you know, whatever works.
Yeah, we had people. It was like, when are you going to cut those off? And we're like, when we lose.
Yeah, that's happened, you know, when they do that for your bag, too, and check your bag. That's kind of what happened to me the other day, too. I love it. So how many did you have, the whole thing? Your whole wrist was bling-blinging.
Yeah, I think we had, between the two of us, we had about 20.
Yeah, it was a lot. And it was a really sad moment because we finally lost. Sidney Crosby was skating across the ice, lifting the cup, and I knew the next day that I was going to have to bring out the scissors and cut them all off. But we kept them all. Like, I have a box, actually, with our finals tickets and the actual band still. So kind of a cool, fun memory for us.
You know, and even with the loss, like, how amazing have those Stanley Cup runs been? I mean, the city of Nashville is unbelievable. The fan base is incredible. They're all in. It's, like, full force. And the entertainment value of just the culture of Music City, it can't be beat anyway, like, anywhere, ever. I mean, I really believe that.
Well, Deanna, you mentioned that Smashville culture. Coming from an outsider's perspective, a little bit of a fresh eyes look on it, how is it that you view that, you know, the tossing of the catfish on the ice, the loudness of the arena that we pipe in, supposedly? What's your opinion on Smashville overall?
Well, I think the Smashville culture, I love it. It's not like, I love it. The fans are very, very passionate. Like, win or lose, good or bad, you know who they stand by and how they feel, and they'll let you know. And I love traditions, so just the passionate fans of Nashville are amazing, and it is so loud. I mean, it is incredible. I mean, being an opposing team, that's got to be, you know, Bridgestone's got to be a hard one to come into because it's off the charts.
Have you been to a Predators game during the playoffs?
I have, and let's see, it was during the Pittsburgh run, and I was blown away. Yeah, and I've seen a lot of hockey games in my life. The fans are incredible.
We had some awesome Pittsburgh fans actually sitting beside us, but they were plugging their ears. I mean, it was one of those moments that you just had to be there to believe it. But we actually almost broke the indoor decibel world record. I think we were 2 dB shy of actually setting the world record held by Kansas. So it's an incredible atmosphere for sure. And you know, and that's saying something from you because you're coming from Minnesota. Also, incredible fans up there.
Yeah. Well, let's beat it this year. Let's get it all the way, right? Like, let's beat Kansas. The decimal of it. I think it's an incredible building. I think it's an incredible fan base. And, you know, like I said, when I walk around and try to meet the fans, and that was really important to me, or just have one-on-one conversations, I love hearing the memories made in that building or at those hockey games. And that's really what it's all about. Like, when you just see a family making memories, I kind of go back to thinking about me and my dad at games for my family. And I appreciate it a lot, just the little things that hockey brings. And just Nashville or Bridgestone, that arena, what it brings to people.
Yeah, it's kind of nice because I actually started going to the Preds games, well, since I was 5, in their inaugural year with my grandparents and my parents. And that's kind of just something that was passed down to us. And, you know, my grandparents aren't here anymore, but, like, it's still a culture and it's part of our family. And it's just interesting to see the progression over 20 years in Smashville. But I do have to ask, who's your favorite player to watch on the ice?
Oh, I mean, the whole team's amazing, but the favorite player, I'm going to have to say PK. Obviously he's extremely talented and skilled, but I think he's so great for the game of hockey in the NHL because he has so much fun and he brings that, just, you feel like you're along for the ride. And I think in any profession where you can find the fun in it every day still is really important. So I would have to say PK because he makes you want to have fun with him and enjoy what's going on. And also he's so involved in the community and off ice. I mean, I'm lucky enough I get to meet the military families before the game, and the, you know, he does the whole Blue Buddies, the Blue Line Buddies, and it's It's really impressive. So I'm going to say on and off the ice, PK is really impressive.
You know, speaking of PK, did you see the thing on Instagram where two people came to the Halloween party that I guess either he or the Preds themselves hosted, and they were dressed up like him and Lindsey Vonn?
I did not see that. Yeah, that would have been today. Oh, I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's
great.
On his Instagram story. You got to go look it. It's hilarious.
I'll check that out. That's amazing. What about you guys? Like, who's your favorite player and why? Do I get asked questions back?
Oh, absolutely.
Flip the script here. So, Kyle, who's your favorite player?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's no secret. I am a Philip Forsberg fanboy through and through. I love
you
that man.
For the easy one.
Well, yeah. I remember watching him as he started making his, like, well, his growing up process in Smashville. And just watching him going, man, you know, we got this guy from the Capitals, and he just has this just – unreal talent, and we've seen, you know, the first, you know, couple games of the season that he's just blowing it away. And so it's just fun to watch him.
Matt, what about you?
I have to agree with you. It's PK for me, actually. The like you said, not only just the raw talent, but he's really a showman and a performer, and the way he interacts with the crowd and the fan base, and even just with his teammates with Joey and them, it's just a fun guy to watch, not just for the skill, but he brings just another dimension to the game that is exciting for their hockey fan base for sure.
Mm-hmm. So for me, it's very difficult because I love Victor Arvidsson too. He's the little engine that he just drives the whole team. You know, I feel like he's Kyle out there on the ice. Kyle's a little shorter. You haven't met Kyle in person.
So Deanna, just let you know, I am 5'4", so...
He's counting okay. Every...
Even
you're taller than me, so you're taller than me and in heels, so you're good.
but, talking about the height, it gives me hope that if Rocco Grimaldi can be on the ice at 5'6", there is hope for me one day.
Amen. I like it. You guys are fun. I bet you have fun together doing this show, huh?
Yes, we do.
We've been doing this show, we started back in July of last year, and, you know, we, you know, started off slow, and we've picked up as we went, and we have so much fun. It's one of the highlights of my week when we get to do the show.
Well, congratulations. I mean, that is not a small feat to put a podcast out and have a consistent fan base, so congratulations. And it's fun, right?
Oh, it's a lot of fun, especially, you know, the three of us will get together on game nights, and, you know, we're watching the game, we're talking about it, taking notes, and then we get here and then we just sit down and talk about it, and usually it's mostly us disagreeing with Matt.
Yeah, the ribbing comes natural because we're all friends outside of here, so we like to rib one another, so it's fun to do, and we have a lot of fun doing
and
it together.
And hold on, Matt's a Red Wings fan. We forgot to mention that.
That's right, that is true.
So
Matt.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that he's from Detroit. So.
I got to balance you guys out every now and then. It's okay.
He claims he's from Detroit and he only lived there 2 months of his life.
Oh, whatever.
Born and raised on the streets of Detroit.
Born and raised 2 months. Born and raised. But, loyal.
Hey, where are the Red Wings at this year? But. To circle back, Victor Arvidsson, I mean, he's definitely my favorite forward. If I have to give a runner-up, man, I love Ryan Ellis, too.
Yeah.
What's not to like about that beard and just that grit? I'm telling you, in that playoff run, he had that injury to his knee that later he had surgery on, and it was just crazy because he was blocking shots, too, in the goal, and he was taking it right off the knee, and just you could tell he was playing through injury, but he was giving it all on the ice. So I'll have a secondary award for Ellis because I do love him very much. And then my favorite prospect player has got to be Tolvanen. So who knows? We'll see about him in the future.
Well, Deanna, before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to ask us?
I mean, I just want to say thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm having a really good time, and I'm really excited about the season. The Preds are an incredible organization, like from top to bottom, and I'm really excited to get to know more of the fans on a daily basis.
Well, one thing I will say, when we go to the arena, I know Daniel and I will be there, you know, hopefully this month sometime. When we get there, we'll have to swing by and say hey to you in person.
Please do. I would love that.
And is there anything you would like to plug?
You know, I'm a huge advocate of, like, mental health awareness and suicide prevention and anti-bullying. So I like to always say that and to just, like, be kind and remember we're all in this together and we're all on the same team.
Well, I think we can definitely all get behind that. Well, once again, Deanna, thank you so much for joining us. We had a great time, and we'll definitely have to have you back on in the future.
All right, well, thank you guys so much for having me. And I just want to remind Preds fans that they can tweet me at DeannaKTV. Let me know where they're sitting, and I'm going to do my best to come and say hello, maybe bring some prizes and all that good stuff. But you guys, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, and have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
All right, bye, and go Preds.
And once again, that was Deanna K. She is the new in-game arena host for the Preds. And guys, speaking of Preds, somebody got a contract extension last week.
Sure did. Show me the money on the birthday, no less.
Can you imagine somebody saying, hey, Daniel, Matt, it's your birthday. Here's $10 million.
What a good day.
I mean, that doesn't happen to a lot of people, you know. But what's crazy is it happened to Peck, and it's happened to him twice now. Twice. So the first time he signed, actually he was on the road, and I think he said in Arizona when he signed his current contract, which was $7 million. And then this last week he actually re-signs for another 2-year extension for the $10 million. And how's that broken down, Kyle?
Well, it's broken down that the first year he's gonna get $6 million, the second year he's gonna get $4 million for his salary, but on the cap it's gonna be 5 and 5. So this is a great deal because now not only do we have Rene coming as a UFA at the end of the 21-22 season. You got Sarah's going to come in as an RFA on the 21-22 season. More than likely, I say, unless circumstances happen, Rene is going to probably retire at the end of his contract, leaving the door open for Sarah's.
So what I love about this is he took the price cut there, Matt.
Yeah.
I know you're big on this one. So he took the price reduction in his contract. So they could actually keep, you know, you're obviously going to be under budget, actually, because he was taking up $7 million per year. So with him and Soros' contract, it's actually 6.5 for both of them.
Oh, wow.
So we saved $500,000, and then you get both of them. And then on top of it, more than likely at that point, like you said, I think he retires because if Seattle's entering the league, do you know who they're going to be wanting to go after?
They're going to get a little bear, Saros.
Yeah, so I have a feeling that will be the moment where we might have to let go and Peck might have to retire. But at the same time, we do have him another 2.5 years, or, well, almost 2 1/3, a full third year. So it's pretty impressive that we're able to keep both top-quality goaltenders. And, you know, it's going to be one of those bridges that we have to cross at that time.
Soros is only $1.5 million. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is the wizardry of Poyle.
Yeah, and he was leading here. He was tied with the league lead in wins last week with Vasilevskiy.
Yeah. What a deal right there. There's no way I'm letting that guy go. I'd probably let a roster player go before I let that go in the next draft. One of the options is to protect another way. I might go that route. I don't know. I like Soros. Like I said, I'm high on him.
No, Soros is the heir apparent for Peck. And in many ways, I honestly think he could be better than Peck. And I think we kind of alluded to this. We were talking the other night, and what's crazy is Peck is very close to passing Kiprusoff for the most wins all time for a Finnish goaltender, which that was his idol, and now he's about to pass him, and he's about to be the greatest Finnish goaltender of all time, which is crazy.
Well, I mean, let's take a look at some of the stuff he's got. So he is 28th in NHL history in wins with 316. This is the latest information we have in the last game that they played, which was in Boston, which I was at Saturday, which was a great game. We'll get into that later.
Game was in Nashville.
Nashville. You know, first hockey game I've been to in a while. Got my places mixed up. But anyway, so he's 28th in NHL history and wins with 316. And he's 4 away, like you said, from passing Kiprusoff for the most wins by a Finnish goaltender. He's posted 53 career shutouts,
including
a career 8 high in last season. The 23rd most in NHL history. And he's one behind Bernie Parent, who played with the Flyers and the Bruins and Leafs. and Ed Giacomin, who played with the Red Rangers and Red Wings for 21st overall in goaltenders.
Yeah, and what's really crazy about Peck, and I think most people kind of know this right now, but he was originally drafted in the 8th round.
Yeah.
Like, you're kidding me, right?
Well, I mean, most goalies are drafted late anyways.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's one of those gems. Like, if you're looking at late round, you know, gems, you're thinking Pavelski, you're thinking Lundqvist, and Rene for sure. I mean, I think those are the top three, in my opinion, that have come to mind that are mainstays in the league and that own a lot of records.
Well, do you think we could see Rene in the Hockey Hall of Fame one day?
Most definitely. I think now, especially that he's passing Kuprasov and his shutout. I mean, look at that, 53 shutouts? That's crazy. He is going to be there one day. But I think what Matt and I were alluding to is what's crazy is Saros has the potential to even pass him because he's younger. And on top of it, he has some skills that, honestly, I don't even know if Peck has. His left-to-right motion is very fast and incredible down low. So I'm interested to see his development too. But you can't complain right now. We have the best 1-2 goalie combo in the league, and that is, I think, undisputed. I honestly don't think anyone else can make a case for that right now. And Peck's super hot in the last 4 or 5 games too. So Peck in the last 5 games, minus the one that he got pulled for being injured, in where Saros actually got the win. So his last 5 games, 4-0-0 with a goal against of 1.26, a save percentage of .959, and 2 shutouts.
Wow.
Pretty good. And then on top of it, Saros came in and did a fantastic job and was tied for, you know, first in the league with wins.
And what I love is, you know, if you looked at Instagram or Twitter or even Facebook, other teams that were talking about Saros that played against him that night, they were like, are you kidding me? Is this Nashville's backup goalie? Because on most teams, Saros already be a starter.
Yeah, he came in cold off the bench and made a blocker save. That was just incredible. I know Matt and I were actually watching that game, and we could not believe he made the save. And he's super calm to be 23. And honestly, I think he's going to go a long way, and he will be our next Pekka, which is sad to say because eventually we will have to part and Pekka will have to retire.
And they will retire his number to the rafters.
But I am very thankful that Peck wanted to keep together the group, take that pay cut, because he knows he's getting older. He knows he's going to age, and it will start tailing off. Take one for the team. Keep everybody together. Peck's not in it for the money right now. He wants a cup. That's what he wants. He's already won a Vezina. He already has all these other accolades. He's about to pass his idol for most wins all the time. He wants a cup. So he wants everyone to stay together.
Well, we could sit here and talk about Pekka all night because he's just that awesome of a person to talk about. But let's get into some of the games. So we decided to do a little bit of different approach on the games. Usually what we do is we go through a recap of every game. But we decided, you know what? Let's take the series of the 6 games we played since the last time we recorded, and let's pick the worst game and the best game.
And here are your choices, Kyle. You have San Jose, New Jersey Devils, the Edmonton game, Vegas Golden Knights, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the game that you are at, the Boston Bruins. So, what's your pick for the worst game out of that group?
I thought about it long and hard, but it wasn't that hard of a decision. I thought the Tampa game was the worst game of the team.
This is not a shock, and I think I know where you're going and why. So, Kyle, let's talk about that second and third period.
It was terrible. It was like, so the Preds did great that first period. 2 goals, everybody's looking great. Then somehow Tampa shows why they're the best team in the East. They literally shut down the Preds' offense.
Their forecheck was, ferocious. I don't know what they did from periods 1 to 2, but they came out. They were pinning us deep up against the walls. I mean, we couldn't cycle to save our lives. It was a very impressive showing from Tampa Bay, but you could tell that they were pressing hard, and they wanted to get that goal. Like, they wanted to come back.
I mean, if you look at the map, the heat map on Natural Stat Trick of this game, the Lightning were all over the place. They literally, every shot they had was in the slot and just inside the circles. You look at the Preds, though, sure, they got 4 goals in the slot, but Tampa held them to the perimeter for most of that second period. And that third period, they were held to it as well. Now, of course, the Preds got lucky with that late third period goal. Then they got that empty net goal. But still, that was the worst game. I mean, they just look like the Kings. They were just terrible.
Well, you know who made a stellar debut back in net after being on the injured reserve was Pecorine. By the way, he stopped 42 of 43 on the night. Are you kidding me?
And he's right the only reason why the team won that game.
0.977 save percentage on the night against the Lightning.
Fantastic, man. What a stand-up ever, especially that's his first game back.
Yeah, I mean,
trial by fire, man.
Here you go. Here's Kucherov. Here's Stamkos. Get ready. And by the way, if you'd have told me coming into that they would have shot 43 times on net and only scored one, I would probably laugh because that team has way too much offensive firepower to only score one goal for that many shots.
Now, what was funny, if you looked at the high danger chances for and against on that team, they split 9 and 10 on both sides. So, like, looking at the advanced stats, and our friends at Between the Fangs would be very proud of me for bringing some deep stats into this. but you look at it and you're like, wow, statistically, this was actually a closer game, but it looked terrible on the eye test. The Preds looked like a peewee team, to be honest.
We were very opportunistic, let me tell you, because we were hemmed in for a while on that third, and I didn't think we were going to hold on. And then all of a sudden, we have a 2-on-1 back the other way, and then Johansson does a toe drag.
Oh, yes.
Backhander to Yarncroc for the finish. I mean, it was nasty. But let's also talk about another play in this game that happened in the first. And let me tell you, Matt, it was real smooth.
Every week. Every week.
So, for all those out there listening, for our real smooth player of the week, it is Ryan Johansson, and it is no shock because, let me tell you, he gets this on the half wall and does a backhand spinorama across the crease, no look, to Josi, who just happens to be placed on the back post, which I'm like, first of all, how did he even see him?
Yeah.
He must have caught him like as he was coming up to the puck. He must have saw him out of his peripheral and just decided to, let's try this.
It was so good. I was questioning. I was like, did he mean to do that? Because he wasn't looking. It was across the ice, wide open. It was crazy.
Like on his tape. It blew my mind. It blew my, like, we were sitting here. Kyle was tweeting on his laptop and I was on the couch and we literally just stopped. No one was tweeting. No one was doing anything for about, a good minute because we were trying to process the goal.
And what I love is the fact that Ellis comes up in the goal celebration. You can see him just mouth. He's like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of shocking. I think if I'm a Lightning fan, too, and I'm in the arena, I'm just kind of like, okay, we'll give you that one. That was pretty nice. But, once again, I just felt like we were very opportunistic in that game. But I don't think it was a good representation of the Predators and how we didn't play well that game, but somehow we still managed to pull it out.
It wasn't a full 60-minute effort. Like you said, the first period was great, and between our own woes and their good job shutting it down on defense the last half of the game, but it wasn't a full 60-minute effort, so we'd like to keep up the effort we saw early on.
So for my worst game of the week, or for the Preds, speaking of not playing 60 minutes, let's talk about that San Jose game for a second.
You mean the blood in the water game?
No, it's called getting up and then taking your foot off the gas pedal.
Yeah.
Just a hair. But you know what's funny? Is you can't do that against really good teams. And granted, the Sharks have underperformed thus far. They are not clicking on all cylinders. But that is a really good team. Look at the roster and don't tell me that is not a really good team. You let off the gas a little bit. Boom. Oh, man. They get a shorty. Boom. About 30 seconds later, they get another one. And here we go. We have a phantom high stick call. And next thing you know, you just blew the game.
And I don't understand.
I got hot. I was hot that night. Let me tell you, because it was hard to sit back and just watch that one. Because you could see them let off the gas pedal. And we squandered it away.
But are you surprised? The Preds have a history of doing this. We get a really good lead, and they are like, they just turtle. Sometimes it works. 95% of the time, it doesn't work.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's the Sharks. And on top of it, you have a backup, which I'm not discrediting Soros, but this is during the stretch when he's actually learning to be like almost like a starter, like an interim starter while Peck's out. And they're used to Peck bailing them out in situations like that. Oh, we can press a little. Oh, we can be a little lackadaisical, and Peck's going to bail us out. Well, you know, it's not going to go that way all the time. Even with Peck in the goal, it's not going to go like that all the time. And, boy, that was frustrating to watch. But credit to the Sharks. They jumped all over us when we gave them just a little bit of an inch. They took it. They got it. Good, you know, kudos to them. Burns is on the ice afterwards, literally looking at Nash, talking about how he wants one of our, I think it was the Kawasaki on the ice. He wanted to get one for the ranch. So, love Burns, but, man, what a terrible game for the Preds.
Well, you mentioned being opportunistic, and we've mentioned this, you know, this has been a recurring theme about Preds and their penalties. The Sharks were 2-for-4 on the power play, so that's 2 power play goals that could have been prevented based on the penalties we took. So we've seen it hasn't bit us too hard yet, and we just kind of recurring theme, you're seeing it, and this is a team that's going to make you pay for it. And they sure enough did it. We let off the gas pedal, got a little too lazy, and that's when they really capitalized on the special teams and made us pay, and that ended up being the outcome of the game.
Is that your worst game for the Preds as well?
Yeah, I'll say that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just was painful to watch as a fan. So I had to quickly erase that one out of my mind, and thankfully we rebounded really quick. But I'm ready to move on to greener pastures. And Kyle, what's your best game for the Preds out of the last 6?
And that would be the last game we played, the one I was at, which, as I was just kindly informed earlier, was not in Boston. It was actually in Nashville.
Kyle, like, somehow magically transported from Tennessee all the way to Boston, and I didn't even realize it.
Being at that game live was a fun experience, and it was also, I thought, the best game the Preds had played in the last 6 since we recorded. That was the game where everything looked like, for the first time, it truly was clicking every step of the way. I mean, passes were crisp. Shots were good. The only reason why that game didn't get out of hand was Halak in net. He was phenomenal. There were just tons of shots that if any other goalie was in net, they would have fell.
Yeah, he's been really hot as of late, and I thought he really kept him in the game because the Preds were swarming for a lot of that game, and on top of it, I thought defensively we shut down their top line, which is crazy because that line is kicking.
Of course, it didn't help that Marchand got basically a 14-minute penalty.
Oh my gosh! So let's talk about the that for a second. So Sissons has the phantom high stick call, and he comes up to him afterwards, and I would have loved to have been in Bridgestone Arena when Marchand flails on the ground and starts doing his antics.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure the crowd just heckled him to death.
It was interesting because, you know, he's already going to get 4 minutes for the phantom high stick. Let's be honest. When you go back and look at the replay, Sissons got away with that. He really did.
I don't know how much embellishment it was as, like, shock that it went white. It's almost like the Sharks player. I didn't really call that embellishment either because it's kind of like it swoops right past your face. You're going to duck. It's like a natural reaction.
Exactly. You know?
But whatever.
But where the real problem was Marchand. So, you know, he obviously disagrees with the goal. I'm sorry. He obviously disagrees with the penalty being called against him. And, you know, he comes up and he's jawing the ref, and the ref's like, yeah, yeah, go on, go on. But then, you know, he just starts agging it on like 2-3 times, and finally the ref
literally flopped like a soccer player on the ice, man. I didn't even know what was going on when I saw it.
And then, as you know, about that time, the period's over, and then we get back into the second period, and they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, Marchand's got a 10-minute misconduct penalty. And there were Bruins fans sitting in front of me, and they were like, this is not the time for that, Marchand. That is not the time to do this. So even some Bruins fans are getting tired of this. But overall, the only bad thing on that game was the power play. Now, for kicks, the Nationals power play is 31st in the league.
Hey, there's nowhere to go but up, boys. Let me tell you.
We're rock bottom.
It's pretty bad right now.
Daniel, that is my best game I think the Preds have played so far. And what about you?
To be honest, I would have to totally agree with you. I actually thought the power play looked better that night. Just couldn't get one in, I think, due to the hot goaltending. So I think if they continue that trend with the passing on the power play, we're going to be looking a lot better. So I'm going to have to agree with you. You know, I'll be boring, But it was a very solid game and yet another shutout for Peck. So,
yeah, for the sake of time, I'll agree with you guys as well. And let's talk about something a little more interesting, though. Who do you think was the hottest player for the Preds?
Oh, for me, there's no doubt it's Johansson right now.
Same thing, Johansson as well.
Look at Matt. Do you have another surprise player?
I'm going to say Forsberg.
You know, it's difficult because we're splitting hairs here because Forsberg is extremely hot, and I'm sure you got some stats on it. But I got some stats, too, on Joey, who this is a player, by the way, who Matt has kind of downed recently or before, especially due to his contract.
Yeah.
Now you're starting to see, though, glimpses. What are you shaking your head for?
He's doing good, better than expected.
Okay, so out of his 13 assists, Matt, he actually has 11 primary assists, which means that he's the one basically driving it right before the goal. And those assists have been beautiful. You have to admit.
Case in point, the Yossi goal.
He is serving these on a platter for people. And I honestly think he's a big reason why we're actually winning games still, because his passes are basically the direct result of goals.
I will have to say that does tend to go looked over sometimes. You know, everybody wants the sexy goal, and I'm for the sexy goals, but you have to have the guy to put it on his tape for him and create the play and create the offensive zone rush, and Johansson is that guy. Sometimes he might go a little overlooked because of that, but he's credit to him for sure.
He's coming on hotter than I thought he would, and that's a good sign for us. I'm not saying this is going to be sustained throughout the whole season, but I am saying that now that he is getting paid $8 million, it is nice to see glimpses of that now.
Yeah.
Because that looks like the play to Yossi, that was an $8 million play.
Yeah.
That's what I like to see.
I'm fine with that. The money, as long as the top line who's making the most money, and they are the ones who are producing, and they currently are. He actually leads the team with 15 points, Johansson, and right below it I had Forsberg, 14. Your top players got to be your top players because you're paying them the top money. And my boy Forsberg, going back to that Oilers game, had a freaking hat trick on the Oilers. Dropped him down, baby.
Yeah.
Now, that makes him tied for second.
Yeah, we still lost that game, though.
Yeah, I know it, but I don't care. Forsberg was something else to be watched that night. That actually tied him for second in the league in goals now.
They were beautiful goals, too, that night. Like, they were top shelfers.
They were. He is now also first in shot attempts and shots in the slot. That's maybe a week old. That might have changed by now. But he also had 15 scoring chances that game versus the Oilers, which is the highest in one game in the league, period, since the 2015 season. That stat comes from the point. Those 15 scoring chances are the highest in one game by any one person since 2015. And like I said earlier, he has 10 goals and is tied for second in the league with that stat.
Do you know who's in front of him since entering the league with hat tricks? The only player who has more hat tricks, Alexander Ovechkin.
Oh, wow.
So he's second.
Wow.
On the list. It's funny because Forsberg, when he gets hot, he gets extremely hot, and we've seen it before where he's just gone off on these tears where he's scoring like he had that one stretch where he had back-to-back hat tricks in games and then
baby.
Another like two goal, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he has like 8 goals in 3 games, and it was like
he was player of the month
and he's just holding the Predators in his hand, that meme circulated around. Oh man, it was incredible. But I'm gonna argue that our picks are almost identical because look at the inverse here. You're talking about, on one hand, I'm picking the guy who's dishing it, and, you know, to the player who's finishing.
Yep. You can't argue with that, man.
But what really hurts us right now is the little engine that could is out right now.
Yeah.
And that kind of worries me going into the Colorado game, because we're not going to have our top line to match completely against their firing top line.
I got a feeling on Wednesday night we'll probably see Ryan Hartman on top line. He was practicing with the Preds on top line today, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him.
He deserves it. He's looked actually really good here recently.
Some of those moves he had on Saturday night, oh my gosh, they were amazing.
I think that's going to be a surprisingly good game, actually. I think it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, he really looked good in the Vegas game. It really shocked me. The two goals that he got in that short period of time and the toe drag with the top shelf nasty finisher, it was very impressive. And he's actually showing why we gave up a first rounder. Like, we gave up a first round for you, so we need you to do stuff like that. And that is nice to see. And, you know, he might be a little bit of, you know, he's got a little bit of motivation considering he only got the 1 year deal. So he's on the show me contract, as Matt would like to say. So we're about to see what he has this year, and he's wanting that pay raise next year.
Yeah, actually, and if you want to take a step back and look at the league for a minute, some other news. Tom Wilson is actually going to appeal the appeal for his 20-game suspension with a third-party neutral arbitrator.
Appealception.
Yeah, so we're going to see how that goes. But it might be an interesting result because both Austin Watson and Dennis Wiedemann got reductions by going this route. So we'll see how that goes. And kind of similarly, Winnipeg's Brandon Lemieux gets 3-game suspension for his check to the head on Vinny Trocheck.
That was. I'm glad he got something for that.
And some Tampa Bay Lightning news. They actually are on quite a lightning hot start at 7-1-1. We'll mention it real quick that is the best first 9 games in their franchise history. And to go along, to couple with that, they also sign an extension contract for Yanni Gourde at 6 years, a $5 million deal.
They took a lot of heat from that one, actually, because
they did.
They kind of were wanting Nylander. So it's interesting because it's going to eat up more of their cap space. So a lot of their fans actually gave them a lot of heck for that.
Yeah, I mean, Gord's a good player. He might deserve that money. He got 64 points last year. But from my understanding, the other fan base criticized that move because not only were they maybe looking to sign RFA Nylander, but they also have to re-sign Braden Point and maybe Sergachev sometime.
I don't know where the cap space is going to be for him.
So that's what I'm hearing. So that's going to be interesting. And also another suspension, Ottawa's D-man, Borowiecki.
We'll just call him Mark.
He was suspended 3 games for his check to the head on Cody Eakin, and that is actually his second suspension in about a week's time span. So he will forfeit $44,000 this time over that span, as opposed to last week he only gave up $6,000. But as he was a first-time offender.
That's quite a jump.
Yeah, he was a first-time offender, and now since it's twice in less than a week, that number jumped up significantly to $44,000. So that's going to be interesting. Also, Ottawa news, a day after Mike Condon gives up a goal from the opponent's blue line, they put him on waivers.
Coincidence? Yeah. I think not.
That was something else right there.
I think that might be just a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, but we'll see.
Okay, so watching the video of him in that play, it's like the pad, when he reached out, it wasn't like all the way down on the ground. It looked like it was almost like folded in on itself and just rolled. Oh, it was so painful to watch.
It still hurts, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was painful, but not a coincidence.
Yep, and speaking of hurts, we got a couple injuries this time as well. Tampa Bay's Victor Hedman is going to be week-to-week following a collision with Ryan Reeves. And another big name, Austin Matthews, is going to miss about a month with a shoulder. And that hurts because he is currently second in goals in the NHL as well. And Vancouver here, so we were talking about Vancouver was hot earlier. They're going to slow down, if not for the only reason, they got 3 men hurt. Alex Edler, 3 to 6 weeks with MCL sprain. Anders Nilsson is out with a fractured finger. And Brandon Sutter, 4 to 6 weeks with a shoulder. So significant roster cut for them for sure. I don't know how long it's going to last, at least a month it looks like. So we'll see how they can do in the meantime getting them back healthy, but it's going to be
a
challenge.
The rookies are going to carry them, baby.
Hopefully so. It's going to be a challenge, though. And we mentioned already John Quick is out indefinitely, so that's going to be another challenge for the LA Kings, who are already at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, I just don't see them clawing out of that. I mean, it is what it is now. You're going to be using backup goaltenders for the entire year, and your man who has basically, you know, been the rock of your franchise for so many years is gone for the entire season, and you started off slow to begin with. So,
well, that stands in contradistinction to our boy McDavid, who has been off to quite a hot start, and he actually, speaking of some milestones, he has become the first Oiler since Mark Messier to have 17 points in his first 10 games.
That's pretty good company.
That's some elite company, big
yes,
boy.
Yes, it is.
Like I said, the McDavids, they're no longer the Oilers anymore. It's just they should put his face on the jersey.
And another big player we haven't talked about yet, Carolina's Sebastian Aho ties Ken Linsman and Wayne freaking Gretzky as the only players to have assists in each of their first 12 games.
Yep.
Sebastian Aho, baby.
And he's on a streak, too. I can't remember, actually, off the top of my head, the players in front of him, but it was very impressive, the streak that he is on right now as far
freaking
as assists.
Ties Wayne Gretzky for your Carolina Kyle's bubble team. That's a guy right there. I'm going to keep my eye on him.
Playoff bound, baby.
And also, we'll welcome to the 1,000 Game Club Ryan Suter, Jason Spezza, Ron Hainsey, and Jason Palmerville this week.
There are so many this month. I couldn't believe how many we've actually had this year.
I know.
Crossing to the 1,000 mark.
And also, Lou Lamoriello becomes the third GM in history to manage his 2,400th game. So he's still going strong and steady. And I saved actually the best news for last, and that is the fact that Brian Boyle has announced that his leukemia is in remission.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So that is awesome news to hear. And not only that, but tonight he scored his first career hat trick. And guess what? His first career hat trick, he's playing Pittsburgh, and it is Hockey Fights Cancer Night in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Ain't that crazy?
That is.
That, it hits you in the feels.
Yeah, that's an incredible storyline right there. I'm actually going to have to look that video up now. I'm sure that is circulating online right now, so we'll definitely have to look that up now that we're wrapping up. So, Kyle, we got a couple games coming up.
What do we got?
So, the big one, as we alluded to, is going to be at Colorado. This
the
Wednesday.
Big one.
No, I mean, if you think about it, top line wise.
I know it is.
But
it's just
we're
sounds,
not going to have Arvidsson.
It sounds funny saying it.
Yeah, against Colorado, I know. Because last year they were like, well, okay. Year before that, not even close. So it is crazy the turnaround in Colorado right now. But without RV, it is going to be a little lackluster because I really wanted both full top lines to be going at it. Either way, we'll transition to Dallas on Saturday, so back-to-back Central Division opponents. Then we go to Anaheim, followed by a San Jose game on a back-to-back on the 12th and the 13th.
That's going to be rough.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting stretch for us. Then we get to finally go to the Arizona desert in Glendale. Maybe they'll wear the Kachina jerseys, Matt.
That would be awesome.
That is on the 15th against the Coyotes. And then to wrap it up before our next episode will be the LA Kings at home on the 17th, and then I will be in the arena for the Lightning game on the 19th. Cannot wait for that one. That is going to be an excellent game.
And I'm hoping I'll be there the following Wednesday for the Blues game with my girlfriend. She's coming down from Canada. Going to take her to her
first Preds game.
Yeah, her first Preds hockey game.
That's going to be awesome for her.
So guys, this has been Music City Gold, and this is the point where I normally give an outro, but as you just heard, as the episode started, we have an intro, so we've got a new outro. Hit it.
You've been listening to Music City Gold on Penalty Box Radio, powered by the Ingram Agency. We'd love to interact with you on Twitter. The show can be found at Music City Gold. You can find Kyle at Kyle Hancock, Daniel at C Dan Drum, and Matt at Matt Bain 31. Past episodes of the show can be found by subscribing to Penalty Box Radio on iTunes, SoundCloud, or at penaltyboxradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the ice.